Chapter 35, Honolulu. Fitch Donegan waited at the bottom of the dockside ramp for the steamship California to secure its mooring lines. He saw Colin P. Stafford among the passengers waiting to disembark, but he thought better of waving. Stafford was not someone with whom you took familiarities, and in any case, the wealthy businessman would know Donegan would be there to collect him, even if he couldn't see him from the crowded deck. Donegan had only a 1 week warning that his boss would be arriving. A letter had been hand-delivered to him at the Pearl, with instructions to meet the Californian. That was all. No names, no itinerary, just an order from master to servant. He wasn't worried that he had yet to deal with Colonel Scoundrel, as Stafford had commanded. Even though the Polynesian Islands were spread across a vast swath of ocean, Donegan knew the bastard was out there somewhere, and would turn up in due time. When he did, Fitch would finish the job. It was that simple. In any event, he knew that Stafford came to Hawaii once a year to check on the business interests his brother managed on his behalf, and, if the rumors Donegan had heard were true, to also take care of business of a much more personal nature. A few minutes later, passengers began to stream down the ramp and climb into waiting carriages. Stafford was one of the last to get off. He was accompanied by a single servant, a young Chinese woman Donegan recognized from the household staff at the Stafford mansion. A curious choice for a traveling assistant, Donegan thought. Unless his boss wanted to be assured of absolute discretion in whatever circumstances he might find himself. He set aside his idle curiosities and turned to instruct the porter he had brought along to manage Stafford's luggage. "My brother is not here?" Stafford asked when he approached Donegan. He felt no need for greetings or small talk. "He is waiting for us at the Palace Hotel," replied Donegan. "He has had a reoccurrence of the infection in his eye socket and is limiting his time out in the bright sun." "The porter will see to your things. Would you like the servant to ride in the wagon with him?" Stafford managed a half smile. "We're not meeting at your establishment. I have heard that the Pearl is a true jewel among swine here in Hawaii." Donegan shook his head. He had fully intended to tell Stafford about the Pearl, but he wasn't surprised that he already knew about the place. It seemed he was not the only spy on Stafford's payroll. Stafford did not wait for a reply. "Jing Kwan will ride with us. You have arranged a room for her?" Donegan nodded and stood back as Stafford and Miss Kwan mounted the step and settled into the open carriage. Then he mounted his horse and trotted behind them to the hotel.
"An exceptional year," said the cheery Wallace Stafford as their waiter set three plates of salad on the table. "Sugar is up, pineapple is steady, and pearl shell looks poised to make a comeback."
"Is activity in and out of the port increasing?" asked his brother.
"Slowly, but it is improving. The demise of the whaling fleet during the war certainly reduced the number of ships visiting, but we are seeing a healthy rise in traffic."
"Which is good for your business, eh, Mr. Donegan?" asked Colin. "Lonely sailors and all that."
Donegan smiled and stirred his salad around on the plate. He did not know why he had been invited to join the Stafford brothers for lunch, and he was equal parts bored and uncomfortable with their business talk. What was interesting was the stark contrast between the Staffords. Wallace was tall, fair, and soft, while Colin was short, dark, and wiry. Wallace's conversation wandered. Colin was blunt and to the point. What they did share in common, Donegan knew, was extreme avarice and boundless ambition, which was clearly the only pillar of their family ties. The waiter delivered their soup, and Colin directed the conversation to a topic that Donegan was interested in.
"Tell me about this priest, this pa'au," Colin began. "The one who took your eye."
Wallace instinctively raised a hand to the eye patch that covered the festering wound. Red, swollen skin surrounded the eye socket, and an occasional drip of liquid oozed down his cheek.
He lives on the proceeds of his family's trading fortune on the island of Kauai,
Wallace said in a soft voice, his eye fixed on the tablecloth.
He is consumed with the fantastic notion that he can expel all foreigners from the islands and restore the old kingdom.
And that is why he kidnapped you and ripped out your eye? Asked Colin.
It was a warning to others, including you. He and his followers are coming.
Coming for what? And are there many?
No more than a few dozen, I expect,
answered Wallace, as he dabbed his cheek with a handkerchief. Donegan could tell that the banker wanted this conversation to come to an end. A few dozen, said Colin in a schoolmaster's scolding tone, and yet you did not report what they did to you to the authorities, or hire someone like Mr. Donegan here, who has expertise dealing with fanatics?
His family is wealthy and powerful, with a trading empire that stretches across the Pacific,
Wallace replied.
They do business with firms we do business with, and if it was known that I had dealt with the man, it would be hell for our bottom line.
And so, are we to dance to any tune the man plays? Have you no pride, brother? No desire for vengeance? Wallace fiddled with his fork and knife for a moment before replying. Without raising his head, he whispered,
I fear for my life, Colin. As long as I do not retaliate, I know I am safe.
Colin reached across the table and placed his hand gently on his brother's forearm.
As long as you are my brother, Wallace, you are safe.
Late that afternoon, Colin Stafford stepped into the Pearl and asked for Donegan. The bartender shuffled off to the back, and Stafford eased into a private booth in the far corner. Only a handful of customers were there at this hour, but by the time night fell, the bar would be crowded, and there would be a line waiting for the upstairs entertainment. Donegan appeared with a brandy bottle and two glasses. He sat down across from his boss and waited. He had an idea what Stafford wanted, but he was not going to make any suggestions and risk being wrong. Too much was at stake.
It's going well? Asked Stafford.
Donegan nodded.
Word gets around quick in the islands, and it ain't just the quim that's bringing in the dollars. The food's pretty good, and we serve a fair pour at the bar. I'm thinking of making an offer on the warehouse space next door and putting in some gaming tables.
Stafford was uncharacteristically subdued.
My brother is doing his part?
He's offered me a line of credit, though I don't need it quite yet.
Stafford downed his brandy, cleared his throat, and slid the glass over for another.
It's coming any second now, Donegan thought.
I thought I might arrange for a little company while I'm on the island,
Stafford finally said, in a matter-of-fact tone.
Makes sense to do that while I'm away.
I have a very fine selection of companions,
Donegan replied.
Something to suit just about anybody's taste.
Stafford had been staring at the tabletop, and as he slowly raised his head, Donegan was struck by how hollow and dark his eyes suddenly seemed. Stafford cleared his throat again.
And might you also have a more special menu? One that might satisfy, let's say, a taste that does not fit within your typical range of average.
By the tone and tenor of Stafford's question, Donegan was now certain what his employer was fishing for.
I'm confident that I can fulfill any preference, Mr. Stafford, including those who might be looking to spend time with a young girl, or even younger.
He let his sentence trail off, and then whispered,
Boy.
The great captain of industry and finance squeezed his glass with both hands, and Donegan observed that when he had said, Boy,
A spark flickered in Stafford's reptilian eyes. Donegan stood up.
It'll take an hour or so for me to make the arrangement. Why don't you go upstairs to room 17, third floor on the left? I'll have our girl draw a bath for you, and I'll have some food and wine sent up.
Stafford nodded his head and began to reach for his wallet.
That won't be necessary, said Donegan with a faint smile. Tonight you are the guest of the Pearl.
Two nights later, under the light of a brilliant full moon, Fitch Donegan came ashore from a small boat on the southeastern coast of Kauai. He instructed the man he had hired to sail him from Honolulu to wait near the sugar loading dock and began to hike inland. The route he had been given was easy to follow, straight up along the stream that emptied into the Waimea Bay, until he reached a settlement of four houses. The largest house, which sat on a low rise and faced the ocean, was his destination. He was dressed in black from his watch cap to his boots. On his back, he carried a small pack containing three razor-sharp carving knives and a flask of brandy, and a handwritten note in an envelope. That is all he would need to complete tonight's business. The trail was clear and smooth, and the light from the moon made traveling easy. He reached the first house in 20 minutes and passed by quietly without being heard by the dog or the people inside. A few minutes later, he saw the house on the rise. It was far bigger than the others and was aglow with lamplight. The main room featured folding exterior walls, a common feature in the tropical climate to catch breezes off the ocean. The walls were open tonight, and as he stole up the rise, he saw a man and woman seated at a table drinking tea. Beside them was a toddler playing with a doll, and nearby was a crib that he knew contained the couple's twin daughters. His heart began to beat faster as he neared the house. Not out of fear, but from excitement. He lived for moments like this, for the thrill of the hunt and the sheer exhilaration of the kill. "Make an example of them," Colin Stafford said when he gave Donegan his orders. "The entire family. I want the gruesome details of their murders to reverberate from here to Australia. I want people to lie awake in their beds and tremble at the thought of such a thing happening to them and their families. I want everyone to know, and no one to forget." He knelt in the grass a few feet from the open partition where the family was enjoying their last moments on this earth. He slipped off his pack, opened it, and selected his favorite blade. He was breathing harder now, and he felt a familiar and welcome warmth begin to spread across his groin. He knew he would not be able to prevent himself from exploding down there during the butchery he was about to inflict on this family. That was fine. The blood and gore would clean off too. He took a deep breath, stood up, and strode calmly into Pa'au's home. The priest looked up from his tea, a surprised expression on his face. His wife let out a soft cry, and the toddler looked confused. Perfect, the assassin thought.